You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Ken. Thanks for being here. Entertainment Weekly is calling it Quarren Stream. That is what the heck we're watching on streaming services and TV during this time of isolating at home. Video streaming is likely to thrive even as our overall economy sinks. Netflix has a deep catalog, and we learned this week it picked up nearly 16 million subscribers in the first 3 months of the year. So what's your new favorite show on Netflix or Hulu or whatever your streaming service you prefer? What series are you binging on during this crisis? What show gives you comfort and much-needed distraction? We're at 800-642-1234. Robert Thompson is a professor of television pop culture at Syracuse University. He directs its Bleier Center for Television and Popular Culture. Bob, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, let's start with reality TV, the guilty for watching TV that we still all love to talk about. You know, that TV. So there, Netflix has this competition show. It's Love is Blind. And I was just really shocked how it really reflects the reality of today. You know, singles going on dates and isolation pods can't see or touch their dates. I mean, this seems to be reality at its most real.
Well, it does. And at the same time, that seems like some quaint old show from ye olden days. Because, of course, Love is Blind was the last big hit that everybody was talking about before all this coronavirus stuff happened. Tiger King was, of course, the big coronavirus show. But Love is Blind did certainly reflect some of that. And coincidentally, Netflix launched just a few days ago yet another love, whatever you want to call it, reality show called Too Hot to Handle. And if you think Love is Blind meeting in pods was coronavirus oriented, Too Hot to Handle doubles down on that in a big way. And again, this was made before the virus. But get this, this is a show which brings a bunch of incredibly shallow but fabulously attractive people onto one of these islands or wherever they're taking place. And they find out after they've been there a couple of days that the only way they can win the money is if none of them have any sexual contact, including kissing. If that wasn't made for the coronavirus, I don't know what was.
What is going on here? Because, you know, there's also The Circle and Next in Fashion nailed it. There are so many of them. Why is Netflix cranking these out right now?
Well, I think reality shows they're doing simply because what Netflix is doing everything. They're doing comedies. They're doing talk shows. They're doing hour-long dramas. Netflix wants to be what every other channel has been for people, all put together. And it seems to be working so far. They keep growing subscriptions even when we thought they'd reached a saturation point in this country anyway. And of course, reality TV, at least since the year 2000, when Big Brother and Survivor debuted that summer, reality TV has been one of the dominant genres on television, and one expects Netflix would get into that too.
We're talking with Bob Thompson, professor of media and mass communication at Syracuse University, and we're hearing about some of the TV that's out there right now. So what show has been your comfort during this pandemic? Is it reality TV or something else? Are you streaming or watching network television? What's your favorite show right now? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Let's bring in Diana now, joining us from Richland Center. Hi, Diana. What you're watching?
Hi. We've been watching Schitt's Creek, every season of it.
What do you like about it?
It's just been a great distraction. I'm a nurse at a hospital, and it's been a stressful time, and we typically watch a lot of news, my husband and I, and that's just been with working all day and with this pandemic going on and then coming home, it's just been really nice to be able to just sit back and laugh.
Oh, it's an outlet. Diana, thank you so much. And I should spell this out. S-C-H-I-T-T apostrophe S, Bob.
Yes, I love the fact that it's a word we can spell, but we're not allowed to say. And that extra C in the beginning and the extra T at the end make it okay. This is an extraordinary series. It just ended, alas. Its final episode played a week ago. And it's almost impossible to describe in less than 15 minutes. It's a really unique voice on television. It's been playing several seasons, finally ended, and you could do a whole lot worse than sitting down and watching that from beginning to end. It, by the way, originally played and just finished playing on Pop TV, one of these relatively recent and still fairly unknown cable channels. But of course, like everything else, or like most everything else, you can watch it online.
Yeah, so much online between Netflix and Hulu, Disney Plus, Amazon's Prime, and there's Quibi now. What is going on? How do you keep track of all these streaming services and what they offer?
Well, my job is to watch all that comes out on American television, and that used to be possible. That is no longer possible. I mean, you can't watch everything, and one really has to pick and choose what's out there. What's interesting, and you know, in some odd sort of way, some macabre sort of way, streaming had really reached its maturity. You're right. You've got all these choices now and everything just in time for this quarantine and virus. And they are, to an extent, a match made in heaven, because you've got all these services and there's so much to watch, and now people are all stuck at home. However, we should point out that that assumes two things. One, that people have a decent broadband connection, and number two, that they can afford at least a few of these subscriptions. And that may not be that isn't the case for everybody. And as this quarantine goes on and more people lose their jobs, fewer and fewer people may be able to have Disney and Hulu and Netflix and Prime and all the rest of it. But if you've got an internet connection, there is good news, because through the month of April, HBO, one of the pricey subscription pay cable channels, has put a whole bunch of their shows, their entire series, not all, but a whole lot of them, up for free. So if you've never seen or couldn't afford masterpieces like The Wire, The Sopranos, Veep, Barry, now's your chance to do it, because they've offered it free for the month of April, at least.
Why do you think HBO made that move?
Well, I think there's two things. One, it's a noble move to make. Others have made that so that people can watch something while they're in quarantine. But it's not all pro bono. A lot of these places are giving free time, just like they give free tryouts all the time. They hope to get you lured in when you don't have to pay, so that you won't be able to live without it, and you will pay after that. So it's both marketing and something nice
to
do.
Some goodwill out there as well. We're talking TV and streaming in this time of stay-at-home orders. Our trusted guide, Bob Thompson, is here. He teaches mass communication and media studies at Syracuse University. So what are you watching on network television? Did you see the new Saturday Night Live episode that the castmates perform from their homes? What about the late night talk shows? What do you think of them? Be part of this at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. We'll be back in just a minute with Syracuse's Bob Thompson right here on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're talking about what to watch and stream during this time of isolating at home. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. We are hearing the music that was used to introduce the starting lineup of the Chicago Bulls in the 90s. It's featured in the new Michael Jordan docuseries, The Last Dance. The ESPN doc drew 6 million viewers Sunday for its first two episodes, making it the most watched documentary in ESPN's history. How are you filling the live sports void in your life? Are you worried about the future of some of your favorite shows as the coronavirus pauses productions and filming? It's 800-642-1234 to join. Bob Thompson directs the Bleier Center for Television and Popular Culture at Syracuse, and he stays with us. So, Bob, you know, we're hearing there that that music, the drama from ESPN and really being drawn into sports, you know, with the live televised sports not being a part of our life right now, what are you seeing from ESPN and others to fill that void?
Well, ESPN certainly gets hit hard by this because all of their content, which is about either live sports or talking about live sports constantly, that's all completely gone away. And they've done a lot of clever things. They brought back the Ocho, which used to be this Sunday thing where they would show non-traditional sports, cherry pit spitting, bratwurst eating, all of that kind of stuff. And they've been playing that on Sundays. And also, and I find this actually more interesting than contemporary stuff, a lot of classic things. I stumbled upon boxing matches by Muhammad Ali and Joe Frazier, all three of them, old matches when he was still Cassius Clay. They're playing that kind of stuff, which is very interesting historically. But the biggie that they've hit with, of course, is The Last Dance. 10 parts about the 1997-98 Bulls season. And here's the really fascinating nod to coronavirus. They're playing two versions of it. Every Sunday, you can watch two episodes for a total of 10. And on ESPN, you get the full episode exactly as it was shot and edited. On ESPN2, they show a censored version. So if you're holed up with your family and you want a family-friendly version, you can go to ESPN2 and watch it so the kids don't have to hear Michael Jordan say the F word.
Wow, they've got you covered regardless of who you're around, right? Well, you know, there's this moment in the series where former Boston Celtics player Larry Bird recalls game two of the 86 Eastern Conference quarterfinals against the Bulls, and that's where Michael Jordan scored a record-setting 63 points. Let's just hear a bit.
We end up winning the series, but it was an incredible, incredible playoff performance. I've never seen it before, and I had never seen it after. That wasn't Michael Jordan out there. It was God disguised as Michael Jordan.
So there's so much drama. There's nostalgia. It's sentimental. It's all that emotion in there.
It is, and it is quite a soap opera as well. Even if you don't care anything about sports or basketball or even Michael Jordan, this is a rip-roaring good time. And ESPN shows documentaries like nobody's business. Their big 10-hour O.J. Simpson thing several years ago is not only one of the best documentaries I've ever seen, I think it was one of the best pieces of American television I've ever seen.
Well, let's turn to network TV. What are you watching in this space?
Well, network TV certainly hasn't completely rolled over. They got Jimmy Kimmel's new bringing back of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, which, if you remember, back in 99 and 2000 was a hit of super proportions, and they played it every night a week.
They did.
They managed to shoot a bunch of these celebrity versions of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, and they got him in under the wire before production all shut down. So they're playing on Wednesday nights for as long as they've got left. And of course, late night television, including Kimmel once again, almost breathtakingly got from live studio audience to live studio without an audience to really primitive stuff doing it at home to now not so primitive stuff at home. And they did that with barely a break.
We're talking with Bob Thompson. He is the founding director of the Bleier Center for Television and Pop Culture at Syracuse University. We're learning about the shows that we can replace all of our non-quarantine friendly activities with. Tell us about your favorite series of all time, the shows you're watching right now. 800-642-1234. We heard from Aaron in Hartford, who emailed to say their family gets together and watches The Goldbergs. Aaron says all the characters in The Goldbergs are great, but Barry has to be the best character in television right now. They're also fans of Schooled. So what do you think of The Goldbergs?
Oh, Goldbergs is the Goldbergs technically should be watched on VHS tape because that's the era that it's from. And especially if you've got a house full of people and you don't want to watch some of the intense, you know, great serial dramas that have played over the last 20 years or so. The Goldbergs is a perfectly fine candidate for a few hours of funny viewing.
Well, you made mention in the beginning, in just passing, about Netflix's Tiger King. Can you give us a plot here about this docuseries and why it has caught on?
Well, the plot, it took them several episodes, and they took their sweet time dropping really important information. You'd get second season, third season, you'd find crucial things out that you didn't before. I think, and by the way, even though this, the Tiger King and Zoom are probably the two cultural phenomenon that we will always associate with the first month of this virus, I think it would have become a big hit anyway. It's got a cast of jaw-droppingly bizarre characters that are both fun and outrageous to watch. And by the way, we have seen Fox did an hour-long special follow-up on this. Investigation Discovery Channel is going to do a series. There was already a movie in the works based on the podcast. So there's Tiger King properties all over the place. Not to mention that Tiger King itself managed to cobble together another episode, if you can call that mess that they put out a few weeks after the original an episode. So it's it proves that every now and again, abject, I don't know if I should say stupidity, but sometimes we really, really like to watch the bizarre. And I guess P.T. Barnum knew that, you know,
a long time ago.
A century.
Yeah. And so these filmmakers, they were wanting to expose the behind the scenes world of these roadside zoos, which breed the tigers and the cougars and the leopard cubs so that customers can pet them. What have the conservationists been saying about this?
Well, a lot of them think that while this show may have had the intent of doing that, it ended up doing a whole lot more and muddying the waters of that conservationist attempt. And also the conservationist, and I'll put in that in quotes, who is one of the main characters of The Tiger King, is in fact exposed to be doing almost precisely what it is that the person she's objecting to, the guy with the roadside zoo, is doing. In other words, she's got caged animals, she's got souvenir shop, she's got all of that that kind of thing. So it really does, I mean, I think a lot of people don't spend a lot of time thinking about animal conservation and zoos and the conditions of how animals are kept and everything. And if nothing else, this show certainly does raise your consciousness about that.
Well, Kathy in Dodgeville wanted to give a shout out to PBS. Kathy's favorites are World on Fire, A Place to Call Home. She also likes Firing Line and Survivor and The Voice. So we should also just give a shout out to PBS. And certainly my kids couldn't do without all of the kids' channel.
I'm glad someone called to say that, because PBS is still one of the great American treasures out there. And not only that, but it's free. You can actually watch PBS on a television set the old-fashioned way. And I'm thinking only as far back as 12 hours ago, they put together an episode of Frontline, one of the great American television series of all time, about the coronavirus. And that played last night, and it had stuff right up to, or maybe the night before, it had stuff right up to like 24 hours before it aired. The American Experience, and they're digging up some of the old episodes about the 1918 flu and all of the rest of it. PBS, if you had nothing else to watch but PBS, that wouldn't be too bad.
Well, I think that that is exactly where we need to leave this. Robert Thompson, thank you so much for joining us, and stay well.
You too. It's always such a pleasure to be with you.
Bob Thompson teaches mass communication and media studies at Syracuse University. He is the founding director of the Bleier Center for Television and Popular Culture. This is the theme music from HBO's time-tested series, The Wire, and we'll be back to talk movies with Washington Post film critic Anne Hornaday after this news update on the Ideas Network.
You gotta watch your back when I beg your pardon. Walk the straight and narrow track. If you walk with Jesus, he's gonna save your soul. You gotta keep the devil way down in the hole. He's got the fire and the fury at his command. Well, you don't have to worry if you hold on to Jesus' hand.
It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Just a quick mention, as the impact of COVID-19 grows in Wisconsin, WPR continues to bring you coverage of the latest developments from our reporters stationed around the state. So we've centralized our news and developments on this. Our analysis is at WPR.org/COVID. So right now we're talking movies to help us escape during this time of social distancing. Movie theaters, of course, closed. Blockbusters in waiting are postponed until who knows when. But the good news, there are many movies out there that offer escape and comfort. Search your favorite streaming service or video on demand. But then what to choose? What movie stands the test of time for you? What actor will you watch in any film? What's a movie you watched recently that you're still thinking about? We're at 800-642-1234. Anne Hornaday is chief film critic for The Washington Post. Anne, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you, Kate.
So going to the movies in that traditional sense, not going to happen now, of course. How have movie theaters found their way through this?
Well, it's interesting. We've seen a real distinction between little, small art houses and independent theaters, those kind of neighborhood theaters that a lot of people count on to bring in the art films, the foreign language films, documentaries, things that are not considered huge blockbusters. They responded incredibly quickly and with great nimbleness and ingenuity right away when theaters were forced to close. And many of them began offering digital links on their websites to films that, you know, whose distributors had changed their strategy from theatrical premieres to digital ones. And they are splitting the revenues with those distributors. It's a way to kind of, it's not nearly keeping them afloat financially, but it's bringing a little bit of money in. And most importantly, it's keeping those relationships going with their viewers. And a lot of these theaters have been really smart about offering extra programming and educational programming and even checking up on their patrons, a lot of whom might be older. So
they have those, you know, relationships in their community as well.
Absolutely. And, you know, like one really great example is the Milwaukee Film Festival and their Oriental Theater in Milwaukee. I mean, they're offering this virtual cinema. So if you have I encourage any listener, if you have a favorite, community hub type of theater that you attend, check it out. Go to their website and see what they're offering, because chances are they're going to be able to give you something interesting to watch, or at least sell you something interesting to watch, and it's something to support.
Yeah, Milwaukee Film has what's called Sofa Cinema, and it connects people with these independent films, as you've been saying, that they can rent. Fantastic Fungi is on the list. During the film, they talk with a study patient who took psychedelic mushrooms.
The most glorious part was that it made me feel more comfortable with living because you're not afraid of dying.
So do you have any connection there to the or know about this fantastic fungi film?
I have to say, this is one of the hits of the coronavirus lockdown. It had actually already been in theaters and was really popular and had already kind of developed a cult status. But so many more people are watching it now. It's beautifully photographed. If you remember that great documentary that came out several years ago called Microcosmos, you know, that took those close-ups of the insect world. This is that of the plant world. It just takes you so close to these fascinating organisms that we call mushrooms in all their varieties, their colors, their shapes, their environments. And then, as that gentleman suggested, it does talk to a lot of experts. I live in Baltimore. Many of them are at Hopkins, Johns Hopkins, who are doing research on the healing properties of these mushrooms, the therapeutic properties. And right now, as people are kind of wondering where the cure and the vaccine are going to come from for coronavirus, it's a really intriguing look at science and research and the plant world and what it has to teach us and give us. It's beautiful.
So indie theaters doing what they can at this time to still stay connected to their customers. What about the multiplexes out there? I mean, they were on thin ice before this, weren't they, Anne?
Yeah, they were. And even though I think they do have, you know, they have some advantages in volume and size and just access to cash and debt financing. But you're right. They, you know, it was a precarious it's always a precarious business anyway. And they, you know, I think even though if you go onto their websites, yes, they do have digital links available. They're not in a position. They just haven't been in that business of, you know, really getting to know their customers in that intimate way that the small ones have. And I think, you know, many, many people, including Jeffrey Katzenberg, have taken them to task for that and said, listen, you need to start acting more like neighborhood theaters because that's what you really are for people. And you should be reaching out more and learning about your people more. And I think maybe the little guys are teaching them that lesson. Like, you know, there is an advantage of that. And you know, everybody's in that curation business, whether they're huge or teeny. Yeah. So I think many of them are just sort of looking at different strategies to finance, you know, get that bridge financing together until they know that they can open.
We're talking with Anne Hornaday, chief film critic for The Washington Post. You can join in with movies that you're watching at this time. Have you come up with a list of movies to hold you over as productions on upcoming films take a pause? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. So, Anne, let's talk some movies. There's one out called St. Francis. It's this coming-of-age story with a six-year-old in it. Can you tell us about this film?
This is a charmer. And this is another one that's become kind of a little bit of a hit during this period because it was actually opening in theaters just as coronavirus closures hit. The star and co-writer is this young actress named Kelly O'Sullivan who plays a 35-year-old young woman, kind of lost, doesn't really know what she wants to do with her life. She's kind of in the doldrums and she is a stopgap. She takes a job nannying over the summer and turns out to be in charge of this incredibly precocious, sort of no nonsense, but really, really charming 6-year-old played by Ramona Edith Williams, who's just a revelation in this movie. And it's just a movie about their friendship and what this little girl teaches this, you know, young, almost middle-aged woman. It's funny. It's tough. You know, there's some edgy material in it. It's an indie after all, but it's proven to be incredibly popular as a digital link from a lot of these sites. And it's just that there's something so observant about that humor of that kind of midlife slump that a lot of us have lived through or are in. So Ramona Edith Williams to me is just the best news of the year. I just loved watching her. She's really dynamite. Terrific.
So where can you watch it? Where can you stream it?
You can stream it on, you know, from any of those. I would first try your local theater because many of them are streaming it. And then you can go to the Oscilloscope Lab site. That's the distributor, and they can you can either stream it directly from there. I'm not sure if it's now available on. It's kind of in transition now, so I'm not sure how widely it's available on just straight up VOD platforms.
Sure.
But definitely go to your local art house first, and then try the Oscilloscope Labs site, and they will certainly direct you to the, you know, they'll get you hooked up.
I just watched the trailer this morning for the Etruscan Smile. The last lines were, do what you love while you can before you've got one foot in the grave and it's too late. I was like, there's some, good advice. Yeah, thanks.
Well, and of course, those are uttered, those timeless, that timeless advice is given by none other than Brian Cox, you know, who plays Logan Roy on Succession. And seeing him in this role, it's so much fun. He plays this Scottish kind of a grump. He's not nearly as grumpy as Logan, but he's gruff. And he comes to the United States to visit his grown son, who he's a little bit alienated from. And kind of like St. Francis, he bonds with his 10-month-old grandson, who's played by the most adorable twin babies in the entire world. So watching Brian Cox interact with this adorable little baby is just like,
it makes your heart,
you know,
your heart melt a little bit.
It's the self-care I think we all need right now, you know, and he's just charming as always. So
of
that's
course,
a lot of fun.
He finds some love as well in his life.
He does, yes. And it was a wonderful cast with Rosanna Arquette and Peter Coyote. I mean, Tim Matheson, like a lot of really great people show up in supporting and even smaller roles. It's fun.
So how are like drive-in movie theaters doing? Is there any type of resurgence of them since you can stay in your car basically to watch movies?
There are. I mean, I think... you know, it's funny because here in Baltimore, we have a great drive-in called the Benji's that I don't think has opened yet. And I'm hoping that they might see fit to do that. But yeah, around the country, we are seeing drive-ins. There is a movie coming out in a couple of weeks. Well, actually, not even a couple of weeks. A documentary about Biosphere 2 called Spaceship Earth. And drive-ins are definitely a part of their release strategy. They're going to be releasing that film on all sorts of different ways and venues and platforms, and drive-ins are a part of that. And you're right. I mean, it stands to reason that people would...
who knew?
You know, it's exactly.
But
exactly.
Drive-ins like would be part of a release strategy.
Exactly. I think it's just so interesting. I mean, I don't want to be too Pollyanna and say, like, it's so great, you know, because it's... We have to remember that there's great devastation at the center of all this, both human and economic, especially for these theaters that are really struggling to stay alive. But it is heartening to see this creativity and some of these ironic resurgences that you just noted, you know.
The Washington Post's chief film critic, Anne Hornaday, is here giving us movie recommendations as we stay at home, stay safe. What do you see changing in Hollywood because of the pandemic? How would you feel about more animated films? What movies have you watched this week? Are you checking out new movies or returning to old favorites? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. We'll be back in just a minute. We have Anne Hornaday right here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Some of last year's Oscar-nominated movies are now available to stream, to rent, to buy. The Irishman, The Two Popes, Marriage Story, all on Netflix. Hulu has you covered on this year's Best Picture Oscar winner, Parasite. How do you think the pandemic will change the way we consume movies? Are you watching all the works of a particular director? I'm working through Greta Gerwig, that is for sure. Join in 800-642-1234. We have the Washington Post chief film critic, Anne Hornaday, who stays with us. So, Anne, you know, we just said there with the Oscar movies that are available on Netflix, what have you enjoyed from streaming platforms?
Well, you know, one of my first pieces that I wrote when the closures hit was some about some movies that never really did come into theaters in any meaningful way, that were, you know, that did go directly to streaming. I mean, I think now we're discovering lots of really good movies that are going directly to streaming, and there always have been good movies that did that. So I like, there's a wonderful little movie called The Confirmation, which was written and directed by Bob Nelson, who wrote Nebraska, that wonderful Alexander Payne movie with Bruce Dern and Will Fort that came out a few years ago. And it's another great cast: Clive Owen, Maria Bello, Patton Oswalt, the late Robert Forster. And Clive Owen plays a recovering alcoholic, divorced dad. I keep coming back to these adults bonding with kids movies. I guess that's the mindset I'm in. But he spends this his custody weekend with his 8-year-old son. And, you know, that's about it. You know, like, they just, they have a series of mishaps. You know, the dad is trying to do his best. He's flawed. He's deeply flawed, but he's not a bad guy. And it's really just a story of humanity and redemption and loving and kind of just doing your best and loving each other despite your deepest flaws. And it's just a wonderful, wonderful movie. And, you know, whenever I can recommend it, I do. And then I always hear back from people saying, thank you for turning us on to that little movie, because it's just a special, special story.
There's also a documentary about a camp for people with disabilities, Crip Camp.
Yes. This is about a camp that opened in the 1970s for people with disabilities and really became a fulcrum for the disability rights movement. And this is, I think, another kind of little mini hit. You know, I mean, this is something that became available right away when the closures hit and got great reviews. It happens to be the second movie to come out from Michelle and Barack Obama's Higher Ground label.
Oh.
So again, just an uplift, you know, it's just a good, it's a feel good news story that I think a lot of people are gravitating toward right now.
There's also Tiger Tail, about the Taiwanese immigrant who comes to America. What do you see in that?
This is a lovely, very gentle movie. It's by a guy named Alan Yang, who is best known for his comedies. He's worked on shows like Master of None and The Good Place. So when you see his resume, you're thinking like, okay, you're kind of bracing yourself for a comedy. But it's not. It's actually just this very tender, earnest, sincere portrait, very much based on his dad, not directly. But it's about a young man growing up in Taiwan who eventually comes to America to seek his fortune. And while doing that, enters not a, a marriage with a young lady who's not the love of his life. So it's kind of a movie about the American dream and pursuing one's fortunes, but also loss and, you know, grieving what might have been. Lots of flashbacks. It's not, there's not a lot of flash, you know, it's not, it's not edgy or hilariously funny or anything like that. It's just very deeply felt and observant and very, very moving. And again, lots of great performances in this one. And I thought very sensitively filmed, just a nice look to it.
Well, you say edgy and edgy teen drama. You recommend Sella and the Spades, about a queen bee cheerleader who's like running rampant.
Oh, my goodness. Yes, this is a really interesting. Now, this is an example of the kind of movie it went. It was always going to open on Amazon. It was never going to open in theaters. I probably would not have had the bandwidth to review it had I been in normal times. But we made the pivot to streaming as well. So I reviewed it for streaming. And what a revelation. It's the first feature of a very gifted filmmaker named Tyree Chapeau. Like you said, about a queen bee at a prep school in Pennsylvania. And, you know, your mind immediately goes to Heathers, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or Mean Girls. And
yeah.
Yes, you know, yes, those elements are there. But Tyree Chapeau kind of takes that raw material and really makes it her own and has her own style. It's a very stylized, kind of surreal take on that. It's like this school is only reality adjacent, you know. I mean, it's just, there are elements to it that are so weird and dreamlike and imaginative and beautiful, you know, just visually really striking. It reminded me a little bit of the work of Wes Anderson, you know, that kind of fanciful, intricate, very, very carefully considered staging and design. And then she's assembled this wonderful cast of to me, newcomers. They've been working, but Lovie Simone and Celeste O'Connor, it's a very interesting little movie.
Well, Anne, thanks for giving us a taste of what's out there.
Thank you for asking, and stay healthy and stay in and have fun watching.
Thank you. Anne Hornaday, she is chief film critic for The Washington Post, and she's the author of the book Talking Pictures. WPR and Wisconsin Watch are documenting the lives of Wisconsinites in this unprecedented time with a new series. It's called Outbreak Wisconsin. Mariah Clark is many things. She's a blacksmith, a tall ship sailor, and an EMT. She's also an emergency room nurse at UW Health in Madison. She's been keeping an audio diary to share her experience as a frontline worker during the pandemic.
It's about 3:30 in the morning, and I'm sitting on my front porch in the darkness. This is normally when I'd be getting off of work, but I've had a couple of days off. And so I'm awake. Everyone else, of course, is asleep, except for the neighbor on the corner across from my house. They're always awake when I go to bed. I work at arguably the best prepared and equipped hospital in the state. We put off elective surgeries. We discharge anyone who's stable to go home. We limit visitors. And some days are really busy and really bad, and we see a lot of deaths. And then there's other days that just feel tremendously normal. So it is April 10th, a Friday, a beautiful, bright, sunny day, and I'm walking into work from the parking garage. It used to be you could walk in any door, but now I think there's only 6 entrances, maybe? And you have to wear your badge to be let into the building and get screened. Just a few questions. Make sure that you're safe and healthy to come to work. Morning.
Hello, are you self-monitoring?
Yes, self-monitoring. No. You too, thank you. So now I'm walking along a little blue tape line that shows us where to go and keeps us separate from the people exiting the building. And I'll go to my locker room. Change into hospital scrubs, put my hair up under a cap, and put on the same N95 mask or surgical mask that I've been using for 3 weeks, and then a plastic face shield over that. It's a little more involved than it used to get ready for work. So I'm driving home from work, and I don't know if you can hear the car around me, but I can hear all the squeaks and the wind and everything. Today wasn't what I can call a bad day at work. We're still seeing fewer patients than we usually do, but at the same time, because more of what's coming in is true emergencies, I think it feels like there's more death. And yet still, it couldn't be called a bad shift by our normal metrics. Today, I had my first friend die of COVID. Not acquaintance, not patient, but friend. And I can't help but wonder, even though I'm not actually superstitious by nature, whether that was why I got suddenly sad yesterday. So I'm going to go home and light some candles and sink into my bathtub with a nice glass of whiskey. And then I'll be ready to face another day tomorrow and go back to work.